You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it. People who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense importance of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and this week I'm excited to bring you another rural resource. From time to time, we like to find predominantly books or other posts or papers that would encourage you as you continue not just practicing rural ministry, but learning about it. This week, I'm excited to review the book, Recognizing Rural Ministry, Moving from Anecdotal Assumptions to Data-Derived Opportunities. Thrilling title, I gotta be honest. It's by Carl P. Green. And this book, at first glance, kind of surprised me, because there was a part of me that was looking at this book and saying, you know, it didn't sound necessarily that interesting on the surface, I'll be really honest, because it sounded a lot like doctoral work kind of wrapped up in a book. And in some ways, I am happy to report that I was correct, that it is kind of a doctoral thesis. But it also surprised me in how casual and informal it came across, even while delivering hard-hitting points on data, but also how much it was able to bridge the gap and truly open my brain up to some new possibilities. I found it to be really interesting, right? Oh, number one, I want to start by just, as we do with a lot of books, kind of breaking down the form and purpose of the book. And then as we go along, we're going to look at some very specific pieces of the book and what makes this book special. Starting out even before we get to the official chapter one, you know, we have the preface, and this is what the author says. He says, he took rural experiences, talking about his dissertation research, and this is what he described it as. He said, rather than approaching rural ministry as a monolithic experience, he wanted to develop assessment tools that respect the diversity of rural experiences. He also wanted to delve into some overlooked ministry opportunities that data points to, but the rural church has been slow to respond to. And this is his stated purpose. He says, hopefully, it creates a readable text that still maintains an academic foundation that is deeply rooted in data. And honestly, I can confirm that after reading this book, that that is what I find as well, that there is a very readable text that maintains an academic foundation. Number one, I appreciate this author's commitment to not just viewing rural as this monolithic experience, right? It's the idea that what he's about to cover is not just representing one idyllic rural stance, not one Kansas version of rural, a New Mexico version of rural, or Montana version of rural, but really tries to compensate for and encompass all the various types of rural ministry that we can find. The second thing is I really love his commitment to demographic work, because it's true that he has brought some research to the forefront that really surprised me, where I was, maybe I had heard whispers of this before, but again, I was so impressed with his commitment to the principle of kind of delving into what the numbers actually say in terms of how we should be targeting audiences that we're reaching in a rural setting. I think that his conclusions, not to spoil anything, really flip it on its head sometimes. It might remake how we define success, and it might help us focus more of our efforts, resources, and time on a different demographic than we're used to. But I think that the journey is worth it. Looking at the basic structure of this book, he uses an event that was near and dear to my own Montana history, but he talks about a wildfire in Mann Gulch in 1949 as the kind of basic examination process of this book. And in that wildfire, they learned three things. Number one, they learned that the tools they had were inadequate, but people were deeply committed to them. Number two, he learned that the communications breakdowns, when faced with something intense like a fire, had real repercussions. And number three, there was so much business and activity trying to do the right thing that they missed the right fight to fight. Using this unfortunate historical tragedy, though, does lay out a great framework for rural church, right? In some sense, we have tools that we have committed to over the long term that are sometimes helpful, sometimes not. In other ways, we have to practice communication, right? Like, we are kind of talking about an issue, not always using the most accurate data and understanding. And third, we have to fight the right fight. I think rural can be a place of, at times, if we're willing to admit it, desperate activity, where we just really want to make something click in our small town. But instead of a shotgun approach, he makes the case that there are data-driven reasons and telltale signs of how to do rural ministry in a way that is approachable, relatable, and smart and focused. And so I'm excited to dive into this with you guys. I just really think this is going to be an incredible resource. One of the main premises of the book, and this is more of a general thought versus a direct quote, but he talks about this idea that there is actually an underrepresented demographic of people in our churches that we are not always the best at seeing or reaching, right? He talks about this idea that in the rural church, and truly in most churches, we really view church growth and church health through sometimes an inaccurate lens, right? And what I'm about to say, as someone who is a youth pastor, a youth director, someone who works with the next generation, sounds very counterintuitive, but I stand by his research. He talks about the fact that sometimes a rural church will have maybe no or few children or youth in it, and we will automatically be written off or write ourselves off as a dying, unhealthy church. And the case that he makes from the data he found was that honestly, some of us might be being dishonest with our demographics, kind of the argument that if we're being real, if we live in a town where there's just not that many young people, it is always a blessing and a bonus and should be our goal to have them involved. But truly, if the demographics of our town are made up of a different age bracket, then we cannot be expected to have the most vibrant kids and youth ministry if the majority of people in our town are just simply not youth and kids. Sounds revolutionary, but again, it challenges the very core of our assumptions when it comes to what health means in a rural church. Instead, he talks about a demographic of people that we frequently put as quiet recipients of church ministry, but do not often look to as a reachable demographic. And specifically, he highlights those who are aged 65 to 80, the baby boomers, the fresh retirees, those who are living a more medically solid life for longer periods of time in history, those who are finding themselves in a new place, a new crossroads of identity. And he makes the case that this demographic is not just something to be brought into our church as a steady giver, but is somebody to be intentionally targeted and reached as maybe someone who's spiritually seeking, but is often criminally underserved in our church areas that, again, rightfully so at times, are focused on reaching the next generation. So this is what he says. He talks about the stats that show the growing nature of this population. He likes to highlight their uniqueness in terms of religious openness. He calls them, these kind of spiritual people, but they're not religious, right? And this demographic, he says, is actually the second most likely to be seeking spiritual truth in their entire life. Obviously, teenagers and kids are open to spiritual experiences because they haven't really had that long of a life to make up their mind. And so we recognize the importance when someone is, 5, 10, 15, of reaching into their life and saying, hey, can we add certainty to your spiritual uncertainty? Can we give you powerful experiences of community and belonging and theology to show you God at a time where that may make a huge difference in your life? But he also argues that this group, this 65 to 80 demographic, is going through a similar metamorphosis in its belief system. And this is why I challenge you to read this book, because he makes the case that people who again, let's take someone 65, they're probably done raising kids, meaning that a huge piece of their identity has now been kind of shifted again away from primarily viewing themselves as a mother or a father. He also talks about vocational shifts. The idea that they might be fresh retirees who are looking to make a new mark and a new identity in life, and the persistent narrative of loss, loss of health, loss of quality of life, loss of friends, loss of mobility. There's a lot of loss that causes them to think deeply about end of life, about eternity and what it means and what their place should be in it. And he says that for all these reasons, that as pastors in small towns, we need to be not just reactive to this demographic being present in our churches, but truly proactive in reaching out to them. Dare I argue that some of us would spend more and better use of our time, or should spend a better use of our time reaching out to this demographic than we do the next generation. And again, it sounds so backwards at times, but I truly, truly believe that some of us are missing incredible opportunities to get people saved. Again, sometimes it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but the idea is that an unsaved person's an unsaved person. If we add a soul to the kingdom by reaching someone who's 65 to 80, that makes that soul no less valuable than if they're 5, 10, or 15 years old. And so really, with this concept as the heartbeat, he sets off on a journey through this book to tell us, hey, what are the tools we have at our disposal to reach out to this demographic? What's the data that we have that teaches us what this, you know, group of people values and what they're looking for? And then how can we fight the right fight? How can we make sure that having the best understanding and the best tools available to us, that we actually reach out to these people? And so I'm going to give probably a general flyby of this thought, but I really encourage you to get and read this book. It's incredibly deep in its understanding, but also incredibly approachable. This is what I really love, is he starts out with a tool that it probably already is in your tool belt, but he talks about its importance maybe in a new way. And this is what he says. He says, this story of loss, reflecting on this idea that the older we get, the more loss works its way into our life, whether it's medical loss or loss of a spouse or loss of friends. He says, it's reflective of an overall experience of others as well. 15 of 18 people who he interviewed noted the spiritual significance of the death of loved ones. So these are people he interviewed who said, man, we are feeling the weight of this loss in a spiritual sense. And they also shared that they became increasingly engaged in a small group or attended for the first time. And this is interesting. Only 2 people who experienced the death of a loved one found a sense of belonging more through the worship service and not through participating in a small group. I love that at the very beginning of this conversation, he highlights the idea of small groups as a really, really important place for older people to process new identity issues and a deep sense of loss. We tend to focus on the main service. I think sometimes in a rural church, it's quote-unquote all we have. You know, we might not have the perceived staff or the perceived lay leaders or the perceived resources to do ministry throughout the week as much, but that Sunday service, we're going to really nail it once a week. And I don't want to take away from that. Obviously, we should still be preaching the word and doing good worship and fostering good community. But he says that one of our main focuses to reach this demographic should be to get better small groups, to be training leaders and lay leaders to foster good conversation. He goes on to talk about more tools in our tool belt, right? This one shocked me a little bit. But he talked about how community volunteering opportunities, just the idea that we can say to somebody, we are going to go out as a church and serve, is going to be an incredible driver for the involvement of this demographic. And it might truly serve as a great opportunity to build relationships that will help us in the long term bring people of this age demographic, age 65 to 80, into the kingdom of God. He says that if a small group isn't the initial hook, then honestly, it's going to be these kind of volunteer opportunities where loose acquaintances can serve alongside one another and grow closer. He also talks about the importance, again, of capitalizing on loss, of understanding that loss is something we all face, and yet this is a time where very uniquely God has positioned the church to come in and have that conversation, to say, hey, can we enter into this story with you? Can we let you tell your story of loss and you hear our story of loss? And instead of seeing it as a negative thing, we get the opportunity to see it as a positive. We get the opportunity to say, hey, even in the midst of this loss, Jesus is present and the church is present. And I, for one, love that optimistic take. One of the things that I thought was such a hot take that was so tough to read, but important, is he really dives deep into this concept that we should at times be more concerned about reaching a demographic actually present in our community than we should about reaching kids or youth. This is what he says. He says, I am similar to many church leaders. I've listened to hours of podcasts and panel discussions and consumed countless books about how our churches need to be more relevant in the community today. Usually that discussion focuses on how the congregation has grayed and is drawing few young families, so we should be ashamed of ourselves. There is truth in the need to reach kids between the age of 4 and 14 with the gospel, but it should not come at the expense of intentionally drawing adults who are nearing or recently entered retirement. There may actually be equivalent shame in not reaching older adults. He goes on to list some of these practical ways in which we can do that. And again, I encourage you to dive deep in it. But I just thought that that sentiment struck me. He doubled down, and he does throughout this book, to say that, hey, we should be ashamed if we're not, you know, of course, reaching the younger generation, but we should be equally ashamed if there's a whole demographic of people that God has put in front of us that we are refusing to capitalize on. I know it can be a challenge. I know that it comes with its own kind of unique approach and baggage. But can I encourage you, rural pastors, sometimes the answer that we're looking for is not to keep trying to reach a group that is simply not present, but to take advantage of what I would assume would be a demographic that is relocating or re-emerging in rural, as this guy suggests in his research, that we have an obligation to be reaching out effectively and powerfully. Continuing on as I walk through this book, he talks about perception barriers, right? This is kind of the idea of communication and making sure we're speaking the right language. But he says that sometimes he calls us out for making a very recipient culture in our church, where we do invite a newly retired person or an aging person to be a part of the church, but we do it in a way that pigeonholes them, that might say, hey, we need you for your dollars, we need you for your attendance, but we don't really expect much else of you. What he calls on pastors to do is to say, hey, we need to communicate differently, that we cannot just have the same old conversation about this demographic, but that we truly need to say, hey, God has given them more time, more energy, more wisdom, more of something that our church needs that we have an obligation to act on. So again, he kind of says, hey, instead of viewing this through the lens of kind of them being recipients, what does it look like to galvanize, to recruit, to train, and to release this demographic for ministry? He goes on to talk about their profile, again, getting on the same page. And I already mentioned this in passing, but he talks about how they are spiritual but not religious, right? This idea that this is a demographic of people who are probably seeking God, but don't necessarily know all the specifics about Him. These are probably the people who have spent the majority of their life having maybe a cultural understanding of God or a back of their mind understanding of God. But we have an opportunity to present a clear gospel to this demographic and to highlight some really important pieces of their own faith journey. Listen to these three encouragements he gives pastors when it comes to developing a deepening spirituality against those aged 65 to 80. Here's what he says. He says, number one, stop talking about only a privatized faith experience. We kind of unintentionally, by doing this, downplay the Christian community. People who are maybe spiritual but not religious already downplay the importance of being in a religious community, the importance of being in church. And we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot a little bit by not emphasizing enough the community aspect of faith. And again, for a demographic of people fresh out of a very structured time of life looking for community, offering community can be incredibly important. The next warning he has or encouragement is to watch out for glow words, right? And by his definition, he just means that sometimes this demographic will say the right things. They understand some of the language and they will say that they believe in Jesus. But the focus on spirituality kind of gives them the ability to reference Jesus without actually ever diving into who He is. And so as pastors, we need to work hard on theology, doctrine, and one-on-one conversation to help a whole demographic of people understand that we're not just referencing a cultural or a vague Jesus, but the Jesus of the Bible. And the third, and this is, I love this language, he says, invite them into authentic ritual, right? There's plenty of conversation and debate on what is going to be a positive or negative experience in church, but overall, there is a need for fresh spiritual experiences. This idea that we are not inviting them into a dry theological faith, we are not saying, hey, at this phase of your life, it's just more reasonable to believe in Jesus, which it is, to be clear. But similar to how we approach the next generation, the youth and kids, we are inviting them to hear the voice of God, to take an abstract idea or a concept or something they have heard argued or politicized and invite them into real experience. You know, are we staging retreats for this demographic of people where they can encounter God in a life-changing way? Are we bringing them to a place of not just intellectual learning, but experiential learning? And so I really was just struck by maybe the challenge of that, of these three principles of saying, hey, how do we make a true effort to not just, you know, address that there are spiritual people in the room, but to say, hey, we're not just going to assume that your faith is where it needs to be, but we're going to bring you instead to a place of deeper understanding. It kind of gives me a task on how to reach this demographic of people. Continuing on in the conversation of tools and communication, this I thought was so interesting, and this is a leadership principle that I would argue goes far beyond even my own understanding of leadership. It really spoke to me personally as someone who runs events and runs church camps and all those things. I was really struck by this concept. I think it's never more important than with this demographic of people, right? And to begin this part of the conversation, I kind of want to draw on previous interviews that I've conducted, right? I remember talking to one of our dear pastors that we interviewed who'd been in Daisy, North Dakota for over 20 years. And he talked about how at different seasons of the church's life, based on the gifts that were present in the congregation, their church excelled at different ministries. He talked about how when certain demographics were present, they had a really great kids ministry, but as those kids aged up, the kids ministry declined and the youth ministry, you know, became more successful, and then those kids graduated. And he talked about how certain forms of community outreach were really great until that one family who had that one skill moved away. And I think this is a common experience in rural church, is that sometimes the bench is so shallow that the wrong person moving at the wrong time can really kill a women's ministry or a food pantry or a quilting ministry or, I mean, you name it, but whatever we have been doing to love and reach the community can sometimes be missed when one person or one key volunteer steps down. And so here's his challenge with the demographic of 65 to 80-year-olds. This is what he says. He said, the invitation to participate in a challenge must be nuanced, right? You can't just invite, you know, we talk about wanting to recruit this demographic to say, hey, come help us live out the kingdom of God, not just be recipients of it. But he says it has to be nuanced. If the church only receives help in predetermined frameworks rather than taking people's gifts, talents, and abilities into account, that is hardly ministry with the baby boomer. The church is intentionally inviting baby boomers to not tell them to simply do jobs already there. They recognize that filling a spot is not really finding our place. I love this. Again, it's huge. For a baby boomer, truly for anybody, but for this demographic especially, they are coming into this season of life with a very unique set of skills. They are coming in saying, I have just completed a career or maybe multiple careers. They might have certain giftings, talents, abilities, connections, resources that we don't possess, and it might look very different. You might say, well, we've always been known as the blank church in town, the one that did this particular outreach. Well, what if you went from having a bunch of people who were strongly administrative to a bunch of people who had more tangible trade skills? Well, then maybe there can be a more trades-oriented outreach to your community that's just been waiting in the wings for God's Spirit and the right people to make it happen. Maybe you've got someone in your church who suddenly has incredible financial knowledge. How could you translate this to helping young families or others in your community who might be struggling with finances, right? You might have a retired teacher or somebody who knows a lot about business who can help the church make solid investments for the future, right? You might have, again, a myriad of giftings, but our goal should not just be the filling of a spot, but the true partnership with a baby boomer or someone in that 65 to 80 category to say, hey, how are you going to not just fill a spot, but to be part of the kingdom of God coming on earth? The final part of the book goes from assuming that we know rural to looking at the meaning of rural from several different categories. Talks about remoteness, the importance of cultural rituals, the presence of these kind of third spaces where communities gather, population density, and it basically invites us to challenge what we think we know and instead look into real people's stories as our primary foundation for ministry. I really enjoyed the following phrase because, again, what the last half of the book taught me about fighting the right fight is that sometimes we assign this blanket experience of rural to people, or we might move to a small town, or, you know, we maybe done ministry in one small town, now we're in another small town, and we tend to make those experiences all homogenous, all the same. And yet, here's what he challenges us to do. He said, when we listen to stories with intentionality, we begin to hear how influential the rural identity is for people. That has a dramatic impact on rural ministry. Just because it's a rural place, the people might not respond to rural ministry approaches because of how their identity shakes out. On the other hand, a place that's not demographically rural may have enclaves of individuals who hold to a rural identity and would respond to rural ministry approaches. So here's the final kind of challenge that I want to give you before you dive into this book for yourself. But it's a question or a set of questions that the author invites us to consider. Am I creating opportunities to listen to my neighbor's stories, to discern how rurality influences their interests and learning styles? Or do I use the rural nature of a place to assume that people in this neighborhood will respond to generic rural ministry approaches? Am I listening for the uniqueness and specificness of my rural community in conversation, or just assuming there's a generic rural culture? I want to challenge you. This book, when I read it, truly did flip something on its head for me, where I thought to myself, you know, in my mind, rural ministry is going in, trying to raise up the next generation, trying to take care of those who are there, but to make inroads into the fabric of a town through predominantly the traditional methods of trying to grow a church by growing younger. But the author's main premise is that using data and looking at rural through the lens of these individual conversations, we are going to get a much better sense of who is in our community, of what they need, and of how we can leverage them in a unique way to fulfill God's mission. Again, someone getting saved who's 65 years old, coming to a clear understanding of Jesus, is just as vital, just as important to the kingdom of God as someone getting saved at the age of 15. It doesn't mean we swing the pendulum too far and neglect the one for the other, but it does mean that maybe as a rural pastor, instead of overlooking a prime demographic in your community, maybe it means that we stop beating our head into a wall saying, well, we just really want to be that kids ministry church, that youth ministry church, but doesn't seem like the demographics are around or another church already kind of has a corner. Well, instead, can we do a different kind of ministry well? And can we be faithful to what God has put in front of us? Utilizing people, asking the right questions, saying, how can I reach in to an equally important demographic of people who is seeking a sincere faith? So my challenge to you is to dive into this book. Its goal is simple. It tries to use the right tools to help us put down wrong methods and wrong approaches and say, hey, how can we be creative and accurate about what we're trying to do? It inspires us to better communication, to understand the demographics of people we're reaching, and understand our towns better, to know them on a deeper level and know the people that are moving there or that are living there so that we can truly be equipped to reach that specific person. And finally, it calls us to cut through the busyness and say, are we going to use the tools that God has put in our hand to fight the right fight, to not burn out and get discouraged by trying to reach a group of people that God might not have equipped our church to reach in this season of time? So I encourage you, let the paradigm shift happen. Open your mind up. Dive into this book again. It's called Recognizing Rural Ministry, Moving from Anecdotal Assumptions to Data-Derived Opportunities by Carl P. Green. We'll have a link in the show notes. But I hope that you are encouraged this week. Every week that we get on here, our goal is that you walk away encouraged, inspired, empowered to do ministry, and not just to do ministry, but to do it in the place that God has called you. He values what you're doing, and He values where you're doing it. It is our greatest hope that these conversations go beyond just a moment for you, but truly become the foundation and the bedrock of ministry going forward. We ask and we challenge you, as we do every single time we make a podcast, that you would spread the word about what's going on here, that you would find another rural leader who you think can benefit from these conversations and bring them and invite them into the party. Very practically speaking, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or on ruraladvancement.com. For this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. We've been going over this resource by Carl Green, and we will see you next time.